الرحمن. Allah Ta'ala helps His servants in different ways. And His assistance, His help comes in very, very mysterious, very, very mysterious, strange ways. Many times we can't even perceive. One woman is grazing her flock. In the meanwhile, she sees an entire group of people going for Hajj. When she sees this, now she can't contain her excitement that this group is going, and they're going to the house of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and I must also join them. So what to do now? She's got a whole flock of sheep. So she threw a pebble towards them and returned them back to where they belong to. The sheep carried on, and she joined this entire caravan. Came to the harbor in Karachi. Now they need to board the ship. Now look at the sincerity and look at her earnestness. So when you are sincere, you are earnest, and you have the full confidence in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then at each moment, at each situation, Allah ta'ala opens the way. It's a whole caravan, whole group of people moving. When they come here and they're trying to negotiate a boat, so the captain of the boat says that I don't want to sell you tickets per passenger. I will lease the whole ship to you. You lease the ship and you all can carry on. Now they lease the ship, the lady got the place in the boat. Now come to Makkah Mukarram, come to Jeddah. From Jeddah to Makkah, now how much she go? This leg, now Allah Pak makes up another way for this woman. It happens here in Jeddah that a wealthy woman, she had a friend and an accomplice in her hodaj. Hodaj is like that carriage that they used to use in those days. A woman is totally concealed. That's the way that the woman should be traveling. That not only her clothing, not only is she covered in her clothing, but her figure is also concealed. So you can't even see her figure. So the way that you will conceal her figure is that you will have a hodaj, a carriage. The carriage is covering her completely. In some places in India, you find this up till this day, that the woman is totally concealed. They will sit in the rear, and between the driver's seat and the passenger seat, they will suspend a parda. When the parda is suspended, now you can't see what's going on in the back. So the woman have the total privacy, absolute privacy. These type of things, where it relates to our haya and shame, the more we can bring and the more we can encourage this, the greater the protection for the iman. Iman and haya, they go hand in glove. As you protect your haya and shame and modesty, then you will find that the iman also grows. And as the haya and the shame begins to deteriorate, then the iman also begins to go gradually. So they work hand in glove. You need to look after these things and look after them very seriously, very carefully. These things don't have to be spelt. Each person knows the surroundings that he is living in and the fitna that you are engulfed in. We all know about it. So under the circumstance, what type of precautionary measures to be placed for ourselves, our children, our wives, etc., our daughters, what type of precautionary measures? We think about it and we are concerned about it. Allah Ta'ala creates an avenue for us, or do this in this situation, do this in this situation. He creates an avenue for you. So this is something that must be natural. Now, if we leave this and we disregard this, then it comes to a point where we feel, what's wrong in talking to a woman? What's wrong in meeting her, talking to her, sitting with her, discussing points? What's wrong in that? So we are actually buying into an alien culture without us even realizing. And worse than buying into an alien culture, then we don't even consider the wrong as wrong. That was the minimum that was required of a Muslim, that you consider the alien culture as alien, doesn't belong to you. The Quran Sharif, Allah Pak says, وَلَا يَدْرِبْنَ بِأَرْجُلِهِنَّ لِيُعْلَمَ مَا يُخْفِينَ مِنْ زِينَتِهِنَّ. So much of caution, the Quran Sharif also exercises on haya, shame and modesty. وَلَا يَدْرِبْنَ بِأَرْجُلِهِنَّ لِيُعْلَمَ مَا يُخْفِينَ مِنْ زِينَتِهِنَّ. When they are walking, they don't strike their feet in a way that the inner ornaments, etc., are revealed. They're striking their feet. I would say, one is striking their feet and exposing some of the inner concealed ornaments or jewelry. And one is even that woman just striking her feet. Tick-tock, tick-tock, she's walking with a high heel. She's attracting people. People are looking at her, "Acha, this is a girl." So they're attracted, just with the walk they're attracted. Just the shoes and the way she's walking, she's attracting people. Here, the Mufassirin explain one very important point. They say that even just the jewelry, for her to conceal that is important, then how much more is it important for her to conceal herself? And then how much more important it is to conceal her voice? If the shoe and her walking can be a distraction, according to this verse here, that can be a distraction, then her voice, then how much more precaution should we exercise in that respect? So therefore they explain that if in a situation, you're caught up in a situation where you have to teach these girls, even if it is an Islamic subject that you have to teach them, and you have to teach them Quran Sharif as well, then let there be a female instructor that is teaching them. But in a situation where you have to teach, then be as far away from them as possible. And let your teaching time be minimal. Because it's going to attract you. This girl is sweeter in her voice, that is even more charming in her voice. You're listening to her voice today, tomorrow you're listening to her voice again, and the third day you're listening to her. Then your mind and your thoughts begin to run away with you. Acha, this is the voice. If this is the voice, then how sweet she must be, and how charming must she be. Then you want to go, you want to see one thing to the other. Do you see under this verse how many things come out? Then if it is just her walking that is charming and that is attractive, then what about her abaya? What about her outer covering? If this must not attract, and this must not attract attention of men, then what about her abaya? How much more careful she must be about that? In that respect, how much more careful she must be? Now she's got an abaya, very attractive. She would designer abaya, and that different type of brand names, and then she's walking out of the house. Now, how much it will attract men? People will see that designer abaya, now they say, hey, yes, sir, who's this woman now? Let's look at her face, or how she talks. One thing leads to the other, people are attracted. One person was telling me that he got a flare to go to the hospitals, old age homes and all that. So he went up to this Aryan Malavan home. And unfortunately there are some Muslims also there. Alright, they didn't have any other old age home, so they had to go up there. So he went there, he's a professional person. So he got talking to some of the old Hindus, the one Hindu Banya that he met up. He says, yeah, now there is a Muslim man, person like you, or Muslim woman, that comes and addresses us, you know. So he just, off the cuff, impulsive, he just asks, and who's this woman? Now, this was a middle age to a senior, old age Banya. So he says to this professional Muslim, he says, but that is not right for us, isn't it? That's not right, that we ask who is this woman and what's her name. Understand, just to ask the name also is not in accordance, not in keeping with respect. I can understand why he must have asked, all right, who is this woman, to understand what is the message that she's giving and what is the background, etc. Is she educated or not educated? But people can look at it and view it in a different way as well. Oh, you're interested in this woman, why do you want to know her name? And why you want to know her surname? See, now this Banya is teaching this Muslim person what is haya and what is shame all about. You see, the shame, that haya, al-haya'u khayrun kullu. Hadith says, in entirety it's good. It's good and good. It's just good and good, nothing but good. The one that has got that shame, then that shame will teach him what he must do, what he mustn't do. One brother came here, says, Mawlana, what is the need for the abaya? So I explained him to conceal the beauty, etc. Beauty of the clothing, naturally women's clothing, inner clothing, but more beautiful, more colorful, attractive. They got some of the jewelry, whatever else. So in order to cover all that, you wear the outer garment, and the outer garment conceals all this hidden beauty of theirs. So he says, if it is that abaya is meant to conceal the beauty, then in this day and time, the abaya requires another abaya. That outer garment also requires another outer garment, because that thing is also so appealing, so it requires something else. Now he's an ordinary person, he's an uneducated person, but he wanted to know what was the purpose of an abaya. So when I explained to him, he says, no, that abaya requires another abaya. Now these are things that we need to discuss, we need to talk about. And the stranger thing is those Muslim women who know hadith and learned hadith, etc., and they are dressing up in this way. So it's a very poor reflection. Haya, al-hayau khayrun kullu. It's through and through. Modesty is good through and through. And as that thing weakens out, then you will see it definitely will impact upon the iman. When Rasulullah inquired what was the best thing for a woman, so the other Sahaba kiram couldn't find the right answer, and her Fatima radiallahu anha, the respected daughter of Rasulullah and the Sayyidatu Nisa'i Ahlil Jannah, she is the leader of all the women in Jannah, she replied that the best thing for a woman is that she mustn't see men and men mustn't watch her. She mustn't see them, in other words, she must not be in a place where she has to look at men, and she mustn't be in a place where men will watch her. She mustn't be at a place where men will watch her. So Rasulullah said, Sadaqat, she's spoken the truth, she said correctly. She's a piece of me. She's of peace. She's thinking like how I think. In other words, this is from the prophetic thinking. It's the thinking like how a Nabi would think. So you see this haya, it's a great thing, it's a very great thing. And in entirety, it's goodness. It's goodness and goodness, nothing but goodness. The major causes for dispute, dissension, fights in this world are three. Sometimes it is position, sometimes it is wealth, and sometimes it is lust, right? Don't you see? Wherever there is a problem, there is a fight, there is some difference, right? There is one of these three reasons. Either it is position, you're fighting for that position. Election time, you see it, how the fight carries on, right? So that's one of the major reasons for a fight, a dispute, a difference. The second is wealth, that also we see. Election is connected to wealth also. The person not fighting for the seat just because of the seat, because he knows what comes with the seat. See? The perks that comes, the money that comes, untaxable income that comes. He knows all about all that, so therefore he fights. So really it's wealth. The position is because of that wealth. And then with wealth is the woman, right? Woman and lust. When you talk of woman, then you talk of lust. So this is the third major area of contention. When you've got this, when this thing is out of proportion, then there's fights. These fights, when she is in her position, she is in her place, there is no fight. Why? She's taken her place. For that matter, anything that is not in its place, then it results into corruption. It results into corruption, problems, confusion. You take notes and money and just throw it in the street, right? Then it's going to result in corruption. It's going to result in problems, right? It's not the place that's supposed to be in your safe. It's supposed to be secure. But you threw it in the open, you threw it out. Now it's going to result into corruption, into confusion, into problems for you and for others. So wealth is not a thing that you will advertise. You will enjoy, but you don't advertise it. Similar is the woman. You don't advertise it, you enjoy. Allah Pak has made certain things for your enjoyment, for your comfort, for your ease. So you keep it for your luxury and for your enjoyment. It is not for public advertisement, it is for your comfort. Now, when we display them, then as though we have kept them for public advertisement and public display. Obviously, it's not in its place. So it's going to result into some, it's going to result and end up in some problem, some fight, and some dissension even eventually. So we are leading and we are creating this type of scenario, this type of situation. She must be in her place. So men need to think about it, how they will get her back. Gradually, obviously, you can't get them in one go, you can't get that done. But the thing to understand here is, what a great merit and what a great reward. If we just speak to this woman with respect and with love, and if they start off this, they begin to understand the right place, and they begin to observe the right type of purdah. You know, when I hear of women and small girls, and girls being abused, etc., then 99% of the time I blame the parents. 99% of the times I blame the parents. Sometimes it is the parents leave them in areas where they're not supposed to be left. And sometimes it is they dress them incorrectly. Are they coming up? A girl, even if she's 4 or 5 years of age, but she's got an attraction. Now the parent is dressing up and they're left open in their cars, whatever else, walking in the streets. Everybody's eyes are falling upon them. Now if they are target of abuse, it's not just that person that is abusing. It is also their parent, like you're throwing notes in the street. And you'll find a fight, you'll find problems, right? So you're throwing your girl like that, you're dressing up in that manner, and then someone's eyes follow her, they want to take some advantage over that girl, either by their looks or in any other way. But who caused this situation? She is an attraction. When she is attraction, then she must be inside the home. She is not for public display, like how we have got it today, taking her to a park, taking her to the mall, etc., etc. She's got a natural attraction. Allah Pak has created women like that, that they must be attractive, right? When He has created them like that, then you need to guard them. You need to take care over them. Now, you are taking them, you are donning them, you are dressing them up, and then you are throwing them up in displaying them, and then when they are abused, then you want to talk a lot of things. No, this is not right. You also party to that abuse. If that person that abused, he is sinful, then you also sinful. You know, it's like jumping into the lake and say, then don't get wet. Now you dress up the woman like that, and then you say that they mustn't be abused. You are dressing them like that, then people want to abuse them. They want to do all these type of things because you are dressing them up like this. Don't you see the statistics? What's the percentage of abuse? In the West, you are talking about, where it's an educated class, over 50-60% women, they say that they were abused somehow or the other. Either they concede it or they expose it. Sometimes the full way, sometimes halfway, sometimes quarter way, but at some point they are abused. At the minimum, at least someone gets into a conversation with her, talking love with her, etc. It happens this thing here. Though the West doesn't count this as abuse, but it's an abuse. Really, it's Islamically, you're looking at it, it's an abuse. We once traveling from Makkah, we were returning. So we had to stop somewhere. It was Nairobi or it was in Dubai or something it was. And there was one accomplice of mine, I knew him, not a friend, accomplice, he, his wife and three or four daughters. So all they were accompanying us and they were returning back to South Africa. So in that flight was one big white accountant as well. So sarcastically he's telling this man, "Oh, these are all your wives, eh? You allowed more than three. You allowed more than one woman, eh?" So I can see the sarcasm in his speech, you see. So this chacha now, he's saying, no, we allowed four, but you have to be equal and fair and all that. So the chacha, that's not the answer for this occasion. See the sarcasm in his speech. Let me answer him on your behalf. Because he worked me up already. The way you were speaking, he worked me up. So I said, see what? You know, our concept of nikah and marriage is totally different from your concept. Our concept is before marriage and after marriage, we don't get into any premarital relationship. See? Not before marriage and not after marriage. No, when I say no premarital relationship, we don't even talk, we don't even admire, we don't even flirt, we don't even go to a club, we won't go into a dance, nothing, absolutely nothing. That is our concept of nikah. Then when we get married also, then just besides our wives, we won't admire any other woman. We won't even look at her, won't buy a gift, nor a rose, nor a sweet, nor a chocolate, not even compliment her, not anything, no flirting whatsoever. And we'll try not to get into a quite casual conversation with her. There's a genuine need, all right, that's a different thing, that's an exception. But besides a genuine need, we won't even get into a casual conversation with her. And now, that is an Islamic kingdom. Then you get, this is an Islamic kingdom, that you say it's a human kingdom, right? Then you find a kingdom that is not a human, unhuman kingdom. Then everything is free for everybody. Prior, before marriage and even after marriage. You can be married here, in front of your wife, you can kiss the next woman, and the next woman can kiss you, right? Don't you see it happening? And then you can be dating another woman, and that other date, the woman can be dating your son, and your son can be dating some other girl. And all this happens. Everything is mixed up. Kachumar, this woman is with this person, that woman is with that person here. To the extent, your own statistics, I show you, in your own statistics, they found in some Western country, one of the leading countries, a whole block of flats, over 500 flats in one hotel. And they say that you couldn't find one child that who can trace his lineage correctly. One child you couldn't find who could trace his lineage correctly. This one is sleeping with that one is sleeping with this one. And it's a whole... When I explained that to this man here, I had to travel from Dubai right to Durban. Poor man was zipped, absolutely silent, nothing. So this is Islamic culture. We live a life of purity. That woman that we have married, we give her loyalty. She gives us her loyalty and we give her loyalty, right? Then we don't admire, we don't even talk unnecessarily, we don't even want to listen to anything that will attract us of her. We don't want to see anything. Totally different. Now the homes also, we design in that same manner. Unfortunately, we get into this Western culture, we get into the rut so deeply that we want to even imitate their type of homes, an open plan home. What it means, what do you mean by an open plan home? Kitchen is open, dining room is open, and then the lounge is also open. So you're sitting in the lounge, you can see what's going on in the dining room. From there you can see what's going on in the kitchen. So where's the parda left? We have got it indoctrinated in our systems that no, her section is different, your section is different. You are different, we are different. We won't mix up like this. So why do we get so absorbed in this culture? When we are rich, Rasulullah didn't leave us as orphans and yatims that you have to take from John and Harry and Peter. People that are poor, they don't have a culture of themselves. They can take from Peter and John and Harry and all that. But we have got Rasulullah. Can there be a person wealthier than the person who's got Rasulullah? Nobody can be wealthier than that. Absolutely nobody can be wealthier. So we need to understand that we have got a very, very wealthy heritage. Our legacy, we are very wealthy. When we are very wealthy, we draw from there. We don't go elsewhere. Beg from this person and borrow from that person. Take from him and take from the other person and the third person. So what we're getting at is this haya and shame and modesty. And I explained that it is good through and through. And if we can start this off, see, we talk about martyrdom and shahadat, etc., etc. But the very core issues, then we forget about it. Very, very core issues, we forget about it. The hadith speaks about one person who revives a dead sunnah, then his sawab is equivalent to 100 martyrs. Now, is this sunnah requiring that we revive it, bring about the modesty in woman again? Do we need to revive this or not? Any person that is in town, he's mixing up, he knows what's going on. He knows exactly what's going on, what I'm talking about. And he knows exactly that he needs to revive the sunnah. But it's not, let the next person start it off, let the next person start it off, let the next person start it off. Can't you start it off in your own way, within your home, within your family, within your children, within the people that you know? All right, try and speak to them, encourage them. Women also, they have got iman in them. They also are sincere. They have got the fear of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala at heart. They have got the fear of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the day of Qiyamah at heart. They have got the love of Allah ta'ala and Rasulullah at heart. If someone speaks to them and addresses them correctly, inshallah they will start off. At least they will know that the home is their place. They don't need to go out of the home unnecessarily. If, for example, if they need to dress and come out, then they'll dress up in a very modest way, unattractive, in a way that is absolutely not attractive, not attracting to anybody. Right? Then the hadith says that أَخِّرُوهُنَّ كَمَا أَخَّرَهُنَّ اللَّهُ, that keep them in the back, like Allah Ta'ala has kept them in the back. Right? Now look at it, if a woman is seated next to her husband, in the front seat, doesn't she attract attention? If I know the registration, I want to see, I want to make salam to the person. But then I make salam to the person, I see the wife is sitting next door. So you feel ashamed about it. But now, if the woman is made to sit in the back, it's so much in conformity with modesty. No, I'm free to just make salam. It's a Muslim man. He will keep his wife in the back. So I'm free to make assalamu alaikum to him. So much more in keeping with modesty. So much more in keeping with the principles of haya and shame. So this type of sunnah, if people introduce it, how much of sawab, how much of reward? How much of reward, how much of sawab? Really, this is something that we need to look into, and we need to bring about that type of atmosphere. One person starts it off, it catches on to the second person, and the third person, within our children, within the grown-up, all at all classes. Now they're traveling, distances they're traveling, with the ghair mahram they're traveling. They're not worried, not concerned, no, it's just his cousin, no, they can't do anything. Or they're going to Joburg, no, no, in 1 hour's time they will reach this, so what's the need to have a mahram accompanying? But when it is the law of the Sharia, then don't employ your reasoning against the law of the Sharia. This is a sickness. That it's a law of the Sharia, then we don't employ our reasoning against that. It's a law of Allah Ta'ala that you're traveling for this distance, you must be accompanied with a man that you cannot perpetually marry, your father, your son, your brother, etc. Perpetually you can't marry him, he must be accompanying him. Then don't try and employ your own reasonings against the command of the Sharia. It's a command of Allah Ta'ala, the command of Rasulullah, let it be. It's a small distance, it's a long distance, but the Sharia has commanded that do this. Are you doing this? Then you're sending the children, girls wholesale into high schools. What are they going to come up with? They're going to come up with trash, really trash. Their minds are getting absolutely rotten. Now then they get into a home, and then afterwards there are problems in the home, marital problems. But why? Because we failed our parental duty. In our parental duty we have failed. So you teach them what is haya, what is your position, what Islam requires of a woman. You teach them these things here, then you will see children coming out like how our fathers, our grandfathers' time, the daughters, how they came out. Nearly all of them made good homes. Whichever home they went into, but they made good homes. Why? Because they were taught the right type of principles. The guidance was right. The haya was there. The shame was there. The respect was there. So why did those marriages work out? And why aren't the marriages working out now? There must be something wrong. So this aspect, this element of haya and shame, this modesty, is being calculated and removed out of the system. When it's removed out of the system, then there's no difference. There's no. You can't distinguish a Muslim from a non-Muslim woman. Both are dressing up the same. So the respect is gone. When the respect is gone, so she's for she is display for public display. One Western writer, he writes, if a woman is not for sale, then why is she advertising? It's a Western woman writer that's writing. What she says, when a woman is not for sale, then why is she advertising? You understand? When she's dressed up like this, and the way she's dressed up, then why is she advertising herself? That means she wants to be for sale. If she was only for her husband, she wouldn't have dressed up like this. But the unfortunate part is that the husband also wants her to be dressed up like this. Going into an occasion, into a festival, etc., into a wedding, whatever else, that she must be dressed up like this. She must be advertised. So this is a sunnah that we are lacking in this age and time. That we need to build those structures of modesty within the woman. And the one that is going to pioneer these things, like the steps that I've explained, nearly all of them I explained, comes in the hadith. You're going to enliven this sunnah, this hadith. You're going to be deserving 100 martyrs. But you'll get that sawab, inshallah. So we're talking of this woman and the determination that she's come with, you see. So here she's come into Jidda. Now the leg from Jidda to Makkah Mukarrama. Now it's a wealthy woman, and she had an accomplice to accompany her. All the way she had an accomplice to accompany her. Now that accomplice passed away. So, all right, you join me up. So that leg has been covered. Now obviously from Jidda, you make the Hajj, etc. So all that is covered, right till Medina, everything is covered. Now the return. As they're returning now, Allah Pak makes another arrangement for this woman here. Now it happens that the children of the Hajjis are getting sick. You see, those days you're going for Hajj, it's a 1 year job, 1.5 year job. So en route, somebody's getting born, someone's you're going one, you're coming two. So all these things should happen in those days. It's a common thing. So now someone is getting sick, etc. Now someone just said, hey, you know, this woman here is a pious woman. Ask her to make some dam and make some dam water, etc. Now she's making dam water. And someone is giving her 50 rand, 100 rand, 1000 rand. Now the leg from Jidda backwards, right to Karachi, everything is arranged. But where it started off from her sincerity. Her sincerity, her clarity, her good intentions, right? She wanted to do it. Allah Pak made the way. So you want to do something, you are sincere about it, you got the fear of Allah Ta'ala, you are trusting Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala, the rest of it Allah Ta'ala will do. He will arrange for you. This is a gift of Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala. He will arrange. But your sincerity must be there, your love for Him must be there, your confidence for Allah in Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala must be there. It must be 100%. Then He'll guide you, He will take you along. This article speaks about this, that you will get this type of gifts, latifa ghaibi, unseen help. You will get this unseen help. And then you need to appreciate this unseen help. Sometimes that unseen help is for your own guidance. Right? One Buzurg, he is in his home and he hears of someone coming into the town. So he thinks to himself, let me go and meet this person here. He sounds to be a pious person, so let me go and meet him. So Allah Ta'ala supports him. Allah Ta'ala says, don't go and meet him. Don't go and meet him. So now, from the divine, from Allah Ta'ala, from the unseen, he's receiving help. Now, those that receive it, receive it. Everybody cannot say, no, I got a divine inspiration. Those that experience it, they experience it, they know how they experience it, right? And those that don't, then they mustn't now say, hey, I'm also experiencing this type of thing. Don't pretend, don't put up an act. So he's receiving inspiration, that you don't go and meet him. So he stopped it. He didn't go. Now again he intends to go and meet this person here. For the second time this thought is coming to him, and it's coming with a force that you go and meet him. So again that inspiration comes that don't go and meet him. Anyway, it happens for the third time. It comes for the third time, it's pressing so much. So he ignores the inspiration and he goes. And he hardly walks a few steps and he stumbles and he breaks his leg. Later on, he discovered, he broke his leg, now you can't go, he's unable. He discovered that that person that you wanted to go and meet was a bidati. Outwardly, he seemed to be pious, but really he was soaked in bidat. You, having had met him, would have resulted in a problem not only for you, for the rest of the town. People have said he's a very pious person. Whereas he was in bidat, he's absorbed, he's soaked in bidat. Now you're going to meet him, showing importance and respect to him. What happens to people? They get into a confusion. So you see, these pious people, they are assisted, they are supported in this way. So this type of inspiration, some of the divines, they do experience. And this is called Latifa Ghaibi. It comes in different forms. Many people, even youngsters, middle age also, they experience this, that they become punctual in their tahajjud, whatever, and Allah Ta'ala then guides them. Allah Ta'ala guides them, get up for your tahajjud. It happens. Sometimes they hear a knock on the door. Some people will attribute it to some jinnat. Jinnat is playing the fool. It's not jinnat, but it's an assistance from Allah Ta'ala that you're going to get up for your tahajjud namaz. Hazrat Shaykh al-Hadith Sahib Rahmatullah, he also experienced this type of thing. I had explained one incident. Just repeat the same incident again. That it's a sweltering hot day and he's just landed in Delhi. Right? Very hot, extremely hot. 45, 50, 55 degrees. So he saw someone selling something cold. He can't read Hindi and English. So he went towards it, offered the person, I want to buy this. He said, no, not for you. But I've got the cash. I'm not asking for charity. I'm not begging. I've got the cash. Please do sell it to me. No, not for you. But why? So there was a Hindu. He said, no, ye aapki kaam ki baat nahi hai. Very sulkily and very aggressive. He said, no, aapki kaam ki baat nahi. It's not for you, this. So Maulana didn't know what's the whole story. So as he's returning, he said, but these people are so prejudiced. I offered the money, but he saw me as a Muslim, therefore he turned me back. So that person, that friend of Maulana tells him, Maulana, thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that he didn't sell you that. That was really, it was liquor that he was selling. That was liquor, and Allah ta'ala wanted to save you, but Allah ta'ala saved you in this manner. That he put it into his heart that don't sell it to him. Though you got the money, but don't sell it to him. And so Allah ta'ala helps you, and he helps you in different ways, in mysterious ways Allah ta'ala helps you. Your intention must be sincere, your focus must be in Allah ta'ala, have your confidence and trust in him, and you see how Allah ta'ala will help. Allah ta'ala tawfiq nasib.